37, he begins to say that this is going to be the history of Jacob in the land of Canaan. This is what's going to happen in the land of Canaan. And then what's really fascinating about this, what strikes me as interesting is as even though it just said that, we find in the very next statement, it says, Joseph, in verse 2, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And he goes on to start to tell a story of Joseph. And for those who've read this before, you know from chapter 37 to chapter 50, until the end, this is almost predominantly all about Joseph. So it's fascinating that verse 1 begins with that, you know, well, verse 2 says, this is the history of Jacob. And so clearly the telescope is focused on only one of Jacob's sons, Joseph, and that he is the one of particular importance for the children of Israel in the days of Moses and the wilderness wanderings. And he certainly was. But there's so much more to Joseph than just the facts of what happened in Egypt and kind of how they got to Egypt and how that all started. There's so much more to him on a spiritual level, on a level of being a shadow of Christ, as many of the individuals that God chooses throughout Genesis have something to do with Christ, have some sort of attribute or some sort of occasion that they, in which they go through their life, and on a very small, very human scale, they go through some of the motions of what Christ would accomplish on a enormous scale, all right, on an eternal scale, on a spiritual scale. And Joseph is certainly one of those individuals as a like figure of Christ. And so this history of Jacob, we might say it's really the history of Joseph, but nonetheless, God says, no, this is the history of Jacob. This is the history of Israel. This is how it all began and how the children of Israel ended up in the wilderness with Moses. It is because of the account of Joseph primarily. So it begins with Joseph being 17 years old. And it says that he's feeding the flocks with his brothers. And it says that the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report to them, to his father. Now Israel loved Jacob more than all his children because he was the son of his old age. Also, he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. So, we learn quite a bit here in a few sentences about this. Now, it does say Jacob was feeding the flock of the family flock. He was feeding it along with his brothers. But it talks about him coming and bringing a bad report of his brothers to his father. And so that kind of sounds a little strange. You know, what is he, a tattletale? You know, but as we continue to read in the chapter, we find out that a little bit later on, the brothers will be out shepherding a long journey away, and Joseph is not with them. And Joseph is told to go and bring a report back to his father as to the welfare of his brothers and the sheep. So that kind of makes the first part here the first story make a little bit more sense, that Jacob isn't just coming as a tattletale saying, you know, my brothers aren't doing any work, or I'm doing all the work, or anything like that, but rather that he had a bit of a different position than his brothers, a position more of a messenger. That's how we see him later on. And so it's very possible that when it says that he was out there feeding the flock with his brothers, that he did hold a bit of a different position than they did. That his father, Israel, had given him a different position. And when you further consider his clothing, it all the more seems to show that he really wasn't intended by his father to be a day worker out there, you know, to be one really getting messy and getting dirty out there with the sheep feeding the flock. As you see that he was made a tunic, the New King James Version says tunic of many colors. Some might say, you know, coat of many colors. So this is kind of interesting, this coat of many colors. When you look, now some of the English translations will not say this at all. Some of the English translations will say, his father made him a long tunic. And it won't say anything about color. And it's difficult to understand exactly what happened here with the translations. The first translation that brought up the idea that there was color in the coat was the Septuagint version. Septuagint version was 200 years before the birth of Christ. 200 years. And it was a translation of the Hebrew, the original Hebrew dialect, into common Greek. Now, why the idea of color being brought into the Septuagint, and of course the Latin Vulgate, later on, the Catholic Church, we have the Vulgate translation, which relied pretty heavily on the Septuagint, and so the Latin versions had the idea of color, a coat of color. And of course, the Latin version, the Latin Vulgate, okay, the universal Pope, dedicated Pope commissioned universal version, had a lot of influence, of course, in 1611 when the King James Version was crafted. And so the idea of color was brought into the King James as well. It didn't start with the King James by any means. So it seemed to have started 200 years before Christ. And why was it the idea of color? It may be that the Jews who were translating the Hebrew into the Greek, who knows what happened here, but it could be kind of a more of an oral tradition idea, or kind of the stories passed along by the Jews. And so they chose to take this Hebrew word and they translate it as a diversity of color or many colors. So I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but that seems to be why in some of the English translations we still see this idea that it was a coat of many colors. But the original Greek word here that's translated of many colors, this is one Greek word, and the definition of the word means to the palms, to the soles of the feet. And the idea is a tunic that went to the palms and to the soles of the feet. So a tunic that was long in terms of the arms, and a tunic that was long in terms of its overall length all the way down to the soles of the feet. So that's the idea. Now,
Rachel's situation where she was buried. Because Leah was the eldest and Rachel
Well, and I'm saying that it could have, as I said before, it could have had colors. I'm just saying that.
Oh, no doubt.
The original.
I was going to say, it was colors.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, he didn't have enough of one color to finish the boat. He just kept. Is it like quilting a quilt? You know, have you ever been around the elderly women that quilt quilts, or even the young women that take up quilting?
Mm-hmm.
They just use scraps and put it in there, and that's what you come up with, different designs and colors.
And that may have been. That may have been. And like was said, you know, ultimately we just don't know. And we don't know. Oh, you're first?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, as far as the colors, like I say, we don't know anything about that. But one thing, for I think his sermon, whatever it was unique. Because when you go further into the chapter, when his brothers see him coming, it says from afar off, they know it's him.
Yeah.
So you couldn't recognize his facial features.
Well,
you recognize something about him, and it's probably his dress.
Yeah.
And then when they took the float back to his father knew the fact that it was his daughter Joseph.
Yeah.
So it was something unique about it.
It definitely, definitely unique. Good point. So the key here is that Jacob is given this as a status that is certainly above the other sons of Jacob. And we're going to find Joseph staying at home while the others go off and have to work and tend to the sheep. But he is sent as a messenger to bring back word to his father as to the whereabouts, to the welfare of the brothers, of the sheep, and these kinds of things. So it's clear that there's favoritism, in terms of that, you know, in the way we view favoritism nowadays and favoritism among children. There's probably a lot more than that. If we just say it's favoritism, we might be missing the point and misunderstanding their culture as well, and ideas of birthrights and who has preeminence in the family. So we view children as equals, and if someone is playing favorites, then that's a bad deal. But in their culture, one of the children did have the preeminence, was given preeminence over the others. So I wouldn't just say, you know, moral of the story here, don't play favorites. With, you know, don't show partiality. I think we're missing the mark as to what's going on. Jacob is certainly been given that preeminence. And he's wearing the robes of royalty, if you will, to demonstrate that. All right, so we're out of time. So we'll have to take up in verse 5 of chapter 37.